Hi, this is Millie Long, co-editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Gastroenterology. I'm thrilled to have with me as my guest for this podcast, Dr. Nicholas Shaheen, who is Senior Associate Dean for Clinical Research at the University of North Carolina. Welcome, Nick.
Thanks, Millie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Nick is talking with me today about upper endoscopy, something that we as gastroenterologists call EGD, based on involving and evaluating the esophagus, the stomach, and the duodenum, the first part of the small intestine. But Nick, as we're thinking about this, someone listening may actually be thinking or scheduled or planning on having an upper endoscopy. What is the purpose of an upper endoscopy? And are there things we can do with that test that may help a patient?
Great question, Millie. So upper endoscopy is where we take a tube about the size of your pinky, and after we sedate you, generally, we run it into your mouth and then down your throat, through your esophagus, which is your food tube, and into your stomach. And then we end at the first part of your small intestine. Now, we don't see all of the intestines because that's 22 feet long and our scope can only get down a little bit. But it's a terrific test for looking for things like stomach ulcers, problems with narrowing of the esophagus, pre-cancer or cancer in either the esophagus or the stomach. And we use it for really common day issues like I've got a stomach ache that won't go away. I'm throwing up. I've got terrible heartburn that we can't get rid of with medicines. I'm losing weight and we don't know why. I think I may have celiac because every time I eat anything that bread, I get sick or I feel bad. So these are the kind of common things that we do this test for, and it's really good for that. And by the way, it's really safe.
Now, often in the test, it sounds like, and as we both know, we do have to take tiny pieces of tissue for biopsies. And is that safe as well?
Yeah. So it's very common that we're going to sample the inner lining of your GI tract. And as Millie was saying, we do that with these little pincher things. They're called forceps. They essentially take a little biopsy that is a little bigger than the head of a pencil and certainly smaller than an eraser, very small biopsies that essentially do not increase the risk of the procedure at all. On very, very rare occasion, the area where we take these samples can bleed, but in a normal individual, that's way less than 1%. So we're talking about a 1 in 1,000 type deal or less. So I even if you get a biopsy sounds scary, right? Oh, they took a biopsy. This is not the kind of biopsy that you need to have a lot of fear about.
And one of the things that you have worked on with a group of individuals is really putting forth new quality metrics, ways that we can say this is a really high quality, a good exam. And it kind of just generally, what sort of things are included in a quality upper endoscopy?
Yeah, this is a great question and an important issue. Not only do we want to do these exams safely, but we want to get the maximum amount of information from the exam that we can get to help our patients. And that's where these quality indicators come in. And essentially what a quality indicator is a statement saying, if you see this, then you should do this. Or in all of our patients, we should be doing this, okay? Essentially, they're a way of helping doctors make sure that they're doing the very best examinations that they can for their patients. And we've got a variety of these that deal with all sorts of stuff. And for instance, if you have an ulcer, which is essentially an area in the stomach that's become inflamed and where the inner lining is no longer present, how should we handle that? How should we make sure that that's not cancer? How should we treat that? These quality indicators address all of these issues to make sure that as best we can, wherever you go in the country to get this exam, you're going to get roughly the same care. So we're trying to make people's care conform to the very best standards that we know. And that's a big area that the American College of Gastroenterology is interested in.
You know, one of the questions I get fairly frequently is, I think patients are aware of polyps in terms of polyps in the colon that can be precancerous. That's why you and I very regularly do colonoscopies in healthy individuals to try to take off polyps before they can become precancerous or an issue. But polyps can exist in the upper GI tract. Are those the same or different?
That's a great question. And I think that many times people equate polyp with precancer because many times that's what they'll hear. The doctor found 3 polyps in me, so I need to come back in 3 years or whatever. Polyp is just a sexy medical term for bump. And it turns out that almost all bumps in the GI tract, first of all, they happen all the time. And secondly, almost all of them are benign. They're never going to bother you. If you look, you see bumps. We're bumpy people. Humans are bumpy. In the stomach, this is definitely a very common thing. And in fact, it gets even more common for people who are on acid suppression. Acid suppression seems to be associated with people forming more of these bumps. The good news is that in the upper GI tract, even more so than in the colon, the bumps tend to be benign and nothing to worry about. So much so that if you have a bunch of bumps that look very benign, i.e. don't have any of the visual appearance that we would normally see with precancer, they don't even need sample because the time and the small risk of the sampling and the cost associated with it are not worth what we would find out. So one of the things that this document does is help tell the doctors which bumps they need to sample, because it turns out that all bumps are not created equal, and a very big bump may have more chance, for instance, going to cancer than a tiny, tiny bump. So we tell folks, sample the big bumps. That's one of the things that's in here. It sounds like common sense, but you'd be surprised. There's a lot of heterogeneity in practice now, and this will help people kind of guide their practice so that it's in line with what we best know about these conditions.
Now, some patients may be curious. They might be scheduled for this test, and they certainly want to have a high-quality exam. Is there anything the patient should do particularly or ask to help to ensure that the exam is of high quality?
So the good news is that unlike when you're getting ready for colonoscopy, we generally don't get people who are undergoing upper endoscopy the big gallon of salt water to drink. So one thing you're not going to have to do if you're scheduled for this test is do what's called the prep, which if you'd have the colonoscopy you're familiar with kind of keeps you up the night before and you're having a lot of bowel movements to get clear. You don't need to do that. But there are some things you do need to do. And the things that you do need to do are, number one, we can't have any food in your stomach. So you can't eat on the day that you've come. You really need to stop at midnight the night before. And I always tell folks to even have something very light at dinner, something soup, nothing that's big and bulky that may have trouble clearing out of their stomach, because we really want that stomach empty to get the best look that we can. If you're on blood thinners, you need to check with your doc ahead of time because you want the doctor to be able to do all of the biopsying and other maneuvers that they may need to do. And one of the things that could cause problems is if your blood is too thin for that. So clearly, you're going to want to talk with the doc or the doc's office if you're on a blood thinner, say for atrial fibrillation or one of the other reasons that we commonly put people on blood thinners. So that's something else that you're going to want to keep in the back of your head and make sure. Otherwise, it's kind of standard. You're going to bring a driver with you because we can't sedate you and then let you drive home or else you'll play bumper cars. But really, in the grand scheme of things, this is a very well-tolerated and relatively short test. The amount of time that tube is going to be down your throat in most cases is going to be less than 10 or 15 minutes because this is a short exam, shorter than colonoscopy. And when you wake up, there's a good chance you'll say, have we started yet? You really don't feel much different after an upper endoscopy, usually.
No, that's great. And that was actually going to be my final question. What could they expect afterwards in terms of symptoms? And like you, in my patients, I don't really see, you don't have a sore throat necessarily or other symptoms. You should wake up feeling quite well at the completion of the procedure.
It's remarkably well tolerated, Millie, as you know, and because of the advances we've had in equipment, the scopes are so small and maybe a little bit of a sore throat, many times nothing, unless you're a more special case where we've had to do a lot of maneuvers while we were down there.
Well, thank you so much to Dr. Shaheen for joining me today and for helping us to learn a little bit more, not only about the procedure upper endoscopy, but about some of the quality work that he and his co-authors have done to help to really provide guidance for gastroenterologists out there on how to do a high-quality upper endoscopy exam. So thanks again, Dr. Shaheen, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Millie, and I want to congratulate the primary author of these quality indicators, Raina Yadlapati, as well as her co-authors, Drs. Early, Heyer, Morgan, Sengupta, and Sharma.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.